Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
We have a cool week ahead. The Southeast is likely to see temperatures a little below normal for the next several days. I'll show you what it will feel like and taking a look at a system that could bring some heavy rain this weekend.
Plus, passengers run for their lives after their plane crashes with a smaller plane on a runway. New information about this fiery crash in Japan straight ahead.
Also, the driver charged with a crash that killed a 6-year-old girl is set to appear in court this afternoon. What we've learned about the girl and the driver.
So we have a look right now at the moment a passenger jet burst into flames after colliding with a Coast Guard plane. This happened at a busy Tokyo airport. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Michelle McConaughey. Five people on the smaller plane died. Everyone on Japan Airlines Flight 516 survived. Ken Smith is in the WRAL Live Center with what we've learned about the plane and the crash, Ken.
You know, Michelle and Jeff, the big question now is which aircraft was in the wrong place on that runway? Was it the Japan Airlines or that Coast Guard aircraft? I want to take you back to the height of when this inferno happened. Here's what we know. The Japan Airlines plane was an Airbus 350, 379 passengers and crew, all making it out of this inferno alive. About a dozen or so passengers, though, were injured while trying to escape that plane. This all happened when the Japan Airlines flight was landing. It appears from preliminary reports. The wing of the A350 clipped the nose of the Japanese Coast Guard aircraft. Now, investigators confirmed five Coast Guard members of that crew died, but the pilot escaped and is in critical condition at a Tokyo hospital. A lot of questions this noon hour, which goes back to, which includes the air traffic control tower. What was going on in the tower at the time? The air traffic controllers, what's the status, the level of experience? The transponder, according to officials, will be very important from the A350 that lists all the communications that were going on at the time that A350 was landing. Of course, we'll stay on top of this story and bring you any new developments during this newscast.
All right, Ken, thank you. And that Coast Guard plane was supposed to deliver humanitarian aid to the earthquake-hit region of Japan. Meanwhile, over 100 buildings and homes were damaged in a fire that broke out following Monday's earthquake. Most of the flames were contained, but fire and white smoke still could be seen rising from several areas this morning. Also today, firefighters worked to rescue people believed to be trapped under a 7-story building that had collapsed because of that earthquake. The death toll associated with that quake now stands at 48.
Happening within the next 90 minutes, a Cary man will face a judge after being charged with hitting and killing a 6-year-old girl Friday morning. WRAL's Chelsea Donovan is outside the Wake County Justice Center with this story. Chelsea.
Jeff, 6-year-old Jocelyn Perez Hernandez was struck and killed, like you mentioned, on Friday near the 500 block of Walnut Street in Cary. And police have charged a 50-year-old man, Andrew Everett, with striking and killing her. Now, Everett actually faces 5 charges, including involuntary manslaughter and misdemeanor death by motor vehicle. This happened across from the RS Dunham Park in Cary. That girl, as we mentioned, Jocelyn Perez Hernandez, was taken to Wake Med, but she later passed away. Now, a neighbor who lives along the street told WRAL News she heard screaming and ran outside and saw her neighbor's child had been hit. We know from Cary police that this little girl was walking at the time. Now, Everett is currently in the Wake County Jail under a $26,000 bond. He's due in court at 1:30. Of course, we'll be there and bring you details in our later newscasts.
Chelsea Donovan live in Raleigh for us this noon. Chelsea, thank you.
Colder air is settling in, and that means freezing temperatures for most mornings this week. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a look at who is likely to see temperatures in the 20s tomorrow morning.
It was a chilly start this morning. Our temperatures at least were feeling like 20s in some places with the wind chill. We did drop down to low to mid 30s, but it'll be even colder tomorrow morning. It's chilly right now, 46 in Southern Pines, 49 Fayetteville, 47 Rocky Mount, 45 at South Hill. We'll only climb into the low 50s, but that's actually pretty normal for this time of year. Here's a look at our temperatures overnight tonight. 27 in Southern Pines, 29 Fayetteville and Clinton, 29 in Raleigh, 27 Rocky Mount, 28 South Hill, 25 in Roxboro. And this is going to be at least 5 degrees colder than what we saw this morning. Now, there was a little bit of a wind chill this morning. There probably won't be tomorrow morning, but still, it's going to feel awfully chilly. Our normal low is 32, so that 29 and below will be below normal. We're going to bounce up above normal by Thursday. And then on Friday and Saturday, we're back down below normal with more 20s in our forecast. Our afternoon highs will be fairly close to normal. We'll talk about what the month of January could typically look like. We take a look at a couple of systems. We have a system that's going to develop and move in across our area on Saturday. It looks like it's going to produce some heavy rain. We could see as much as 1.5 to 2 inches. The timing of this system will be critical to whether or not we see anything frozen. We're going to walk you through the timeline on FutureCast coming up in just a few minutes.
Highway Patrol is investigating a head-on collision in Sampson County. This happened shortly before 9 o'clock on U.S. 421 in Sampson County. Sky 5 flew over that scene near Plainview Highway, right across from Central Baptist Church. Emergency and fire crews were on that scene investigating. We'll let you know once the drivers have been identified. A Raleigh man is facing charges after nearly killing his 5-year-old child. Amir Devin Hines was arrested today and is charged with felony child abuse, inflicting serious bodily injury. The arrest warrant says the child was abused so badly it caused the child's brain to hemorrhage. 24-year-old Hines is being held on $500,000 bond.
New at noon, we're getting an update about the North Carolina baby who received the world's first partial heart transplant. WREL's Brian Schrader is here with some good news, Brian.
Michelle, we first brought you this story in 2022. Owen Monroe from Leland, North Carolina, was born at Duke University Hospital with a rare heart defect. The two main heart arteries were fused together as one, and he had a significant heart valve leak. Doctors didn't think Owen would live long enough to get the heart transplant he needed, so a team at Duke Health performed what is believed to be the world's first partial heart transplant. It used healthy arteries and valves from a heart that had muscle tissue too weak for a full transplant. And now we've learned it has been successful. A study published this morning in the Journal of the American Medical Association says the transplant led to two well-functioning valves and arteries that are growing normally with Owen. The doctors involved in that procedure are calling for a clinical trial to take that procedure to the next level and make it available to more patients. Some great news there.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing news. Brian Schrader, thank you so much.
And happening now in the WREL Live Center, Governor Cooper ordering all U.S. and state flags to half-staff position in honor of that slain Greensboro Police Sergeant Dale Nix. And you can see there's a live picture of the legislative building, the state flag, the U.S. flag at half-staff, again, in honor of Sergeant Dale Nix, who was killed a couple of days ago. These flags will remain in this honorary position until sunset tomorrow. Sergeant Nix died when he was shot by a suspect stealing beer from a sheet in Greensboro. He was a longtime, well-respected member of the Greensboro Police Department for the last 23 years. Of course, this is a story that we will continue to follow here in the WREL Live Center.
Today, a new noise ordinance within Raleigh city limits could be approved. WREL's Kelsey Coffey tells us how this could affect people who live near places like Glenwood South.
The ordinance applies citywide, but it would obviously impact folks who live in areas like Glenwood South. This particular part of Glenwood Avenue is known for loud music and nightlife. Last month, the city council approved a new process for permitting clubs and other nightlife venues. The city says they received over 100 comments, all offering feedback for a noise ordinance. The city attorney's office made some revisions, including adding higher fees, upping penalties by at least $150. Another change was removing the noise ordinance during permitted special events. Now the question becomes, how loud is too loud? The answer, it depends. There are different rules based off of time of day and what type of noise is being created. City Council will meet about this today at 1 o'clock. Kelsey Coffey, WREL News in Raleigh.
Durham leaders are working to address homelessness in the city in the new year. At today's City Council meeting, leaders there are looking to set aside money for various homeless services. City manager is asking for authorization to help provide rehousing services, money for emergency shelters, and permanent supportive housing. That meeting gets underway tonight at 7.
New restrictions start today for visitors to hospitals in the Triangle area. It's all in an effort to help slow the spread of the flu. WREL's Laura Levine is at Wake Med in Raleigh with the new rules.
Some people may have already noticed that masking is required at many hospitals once again. And now starting today, places like WigMed here behind me will be implementing these new restrictions to help protect the most vulnerable from RSV, flu and COVID. Beginning this morning, visitors in all WigMed hospital patient care areas, including waiting rooms, must be at least 12 years old. Similar restrictions go into place for UNC hospitals, Chapel Hill, Hillsboro and youth behavioral health campuses. Visitors 11 and younger are prohibited from all inpatient areas and all waiting rooms. This comes as more patients in North Carolina hospitals are being treated for flu than COVID for the first time since the start of the pandemic. We spoke with Dr. David Weber with UNC about the latest steps to stop the spread among children.
It's not necessarily easy to tell when a young child is ill because they can't verbalize things such as feeling poorly, fever, and others. So that is one reason. Two, children, of course, they also have higher viral loads, so that they are more contagious than older individuals.
Tomorrow, Duke Hospitals is limiting visitors to two at a time per patient, and children under 12 also are not allowed to visit. Dr. Weber says the flu peaks typically mid-January and February, but right now there's no sign of cases slowing down. It's also important to mention when it comes to these new restrictions that there are a few exceptions, such as if a patient is dying. Laura Levine, WREL News in Raleigh.
Next at noon, a conversation about how slavery ended in North Carolina. A Raleigh historian joins us to explain the Emancipation Celebration planned for this weekend.
Also, twins born on different days, in fact, different years. The similarities and differences between these New Year's gifts.
Plus, wrapping up record holiday travel. How this year was smooth sailing compared to last.
Keep watching WREL News over the air, Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.
The City of Raleigh Museum is hosting an Emancipation Day this Saturday. The event teaches the community the unique history of ending slavery in North Carolina. Grady Bussey, African-American historian and vice chair of Friends of the City of Raleigh Museum, joins us now to talk about this history and the scheduled activities that are planned. Grady, good afternoon to you. Happy New Year to you. Give us a little bit of the background of Emancipation Day in North Carolina.
Yeah, you know, so normally when we think about Emancipation Day, you know, within recent years, we think about Juneteenth. But in actuality, as history tells its own story, Emancipation Day was actually celebrated January 1st after Abraham Lincoln pronounced the end of slavery in January 1, 1863. And so North Carolina has always celebrated the Day of Freedom, and it actually started in New Bern, North Carolina. And we have for hundreds of years of actually been able to help tell the story about slavery and freedom. And we are going to do no different here at the City of Raleigh Museum this weekend.
So what do people do when they celebrate Emancipation Day?
Yeah, so, you know, 100 years ago, while people continued to celebrate Emancipation Day, it was always a community gathering. They had parades, they had speakers, they had leaders, both African-American and white would come out and speak. And they would also read both the Emancipation Proclamation as well as the Declaration of Independence. And so the City of Raleigh's museum has always been serious about showing new history, but also kind of bringing homage to our history pack. So this weekend, we have a tremendous amount of programming that is geared towards help telling the story about independence as well as slavery.
So you're going to have the public can come out. What exactly is the museum planning for this?
Yeah, so we actually have a bunch of different things throughout the week itself. We're starting, there is actually a trolley tour that's actually sold out that actually helps tell the story about the Raleigh's impact as well as the Civil War in African-American communities. There's a 35th U.S. Colored Infantry Regiment encampment program that's going to be at the Top Green Community Center on the 6th this Saturday. And it's going to be people that are going to tell the experience of the African-American soldier through Civil War. We also have story time for the children, and we lead up into our last one, an actual event with Mary Williams at Watch Night. She's extraordinary. She's going to help tell the story about the whole experience dealing with the civil rights, dealing with the after slavery, Emancipation Proclamation, and it's going to be truly a unique and extraordinary experience.
Yeah, wealth of information there, and an important few days here coming up. We appreciate the history behind it. Grady Bussey, thank you so much for your time.
Always a pleasure.
A foreign exchange student from China who was reported missing last week in Utah has been found safe. The 17-year-old student was reported missing on Friday. Authorities said the student's family received a ransom note and believed that he was in danger, while he also believed his family was in danger. Police say that he was the victim of an apparent cyber kidnapping scheme to extort $80,000 from the student's family. The family paid the ransom before he was found. And Chicago police are investigating a real-life Home Alone case. On New Year's Eve, Chicago police discovered that four young kids were left home alone for the holidays. An 11-year-old boy flagged down an officer and reported that he was at home with three other children. Police followed the child to the home and found a 1-year-old boy, a 4-year-old girl, and a 7-year-old boy. Illinois law requires children be at least 14 years old to be left alone. Officers have not been able to find a guardian.
And happening now in the WRA Live Center, we now know where that winning Powerball lottery ticket was sold, right here. This is a Food Castle convenience store in Grand Blanc, Michigan, in Genesee County. This is about an hour east of Lansing, Michigan. Of course, no one has come forward just yet. The Michigan Lottery won't be able to identify that person, of course, until that person or persons come forward. You recall, $842.4 million were up for grabs. Now, if the winner or winners take the lump sum, they can walk away with $425.2 million. The jackpot is the fifth largest Powerball jackpot in the U.S. Boy, somebody waking up a millionaire and starting the new year off right.
Isn't that the greatest way to start? Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ken. Some twins share many things like looks and personalities, and most share the same birthday, right? But for one set of twins in New Jersey, they don't even share the same birth year. Ezra and Ezekiel Humphrey were born 40 minutes apart in New Jersey, and that's where the similarities end. Ezra was born at 11:48 p.m. New Year's Eve. Brother Ezekiel was born 12:28 a.m. New Year's Day 2024. The fraternal twins are different, not only in looks, but personalities. Ezra, 6 pounds, sleeps a lot. Ezekiel, 4 pounds, 15 ounces, doesn't stop moving.
It feels like paperwork is going to be the most challenging, right? You tell somebody you've got twins, they want to write down the same date. Oh no, they're born different days, different years too.
And that's going to be confusing. And then they're going to say we're twins, and people are going to say you're lying.
Okay, so the kicker here, Ezra now shares a birthday with his dad.
Oh my goodness, I love that so much. They're so cute.
New Year's Eve babies, yes. They are special.
They are. I have twin brothers. I'm not a twin. I have brothers who are twins,
right.
But they're identical.
Right.
They are very different.
I have a New Year's Eve baby.
There you go.
Well.
Yes, it was
so,
just your daughter's 21st.
Yeah, I know, right?
21. Oh, boy. All right, meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner standing by now. We got to talk weather. It's warming up out there slowly.
Yes, very slowly. We take a live look at Fayetteville. It looks beautiful out there. Lots and lots of sunshine. I was out just a little while ago, and you know, that sunshine makes it feel good as long as it isn't windy, and it's really not. It was a bit more windy yesterday, making it feel a lot colder. But right now, in the triangle, it's 47. Our dew point's down at 25, so we have a very dry air mass in place. So we are completely cloud-free. In a couple of hours, we'll bounce up to 51. That'll be the warmest temperature. Once we hit sunset, we are dropping fast into the low to mid-40s around 6 or 7 o'clock. Our wind speed, though, dropping a little bit. You know, looking at northwest wind at 7 or 8 miles per hour for the next few hours. But once we get past sunset, those winds really die down, and we shouldn't end up with much wind. Shouldn't be a wind chill to deal with tomorrow morning. But sometimes when we see the winds die down, it allows our air to cool faster, and so that's just one of the reasons why we're expecting to see a lot of widespread 20s for tomorrow. So the temperature is on the left and the wind chill is on the right. Now, this is not a dangerous wind chill. It's just kind of an OG look. 46 in Southern Pines, but it feels like 42. Feels like 44 in Durham and Raleigh. Feels like 39 up in Roxborough. It's 47 in Rocky Mount, but it feels like 41. So it is feeling a little bit cooler than the actual temperature. 51 in Raleigh and Durham for the high this afternoon and 53 in Fayetteville. We take a look at our cool week ahead. You can see pretty much the entire southeast shaded here in blue. Temperatures will likely be a little bit below normal, especially the overnight lows for the next 5 or 6 days. There's plenty of warmth that's back to the west or south of us, but we're not likely to see any of it. Our forecast low for tonight is 20s all across the board, from 25 in Roxborough to 29 in Fayetteville and Clinton, 27 in Southern Pines and Rocky Mount, 28 in Goldsboro. 32 is our normal low for this time of year. We'll be a little bit warmer Thursday morning at 37. We're going to have the potential for a quick sprinkle on Thursday morning. We're dry Friday, but boy, looking at wet conditions on Saturday. But look at that, 28. Boy, the timing of the rain will be important in terms of what we'll see. Now, even if we do see the cold temperatures as the precipitation begins, it is likely to be freezing rain and not snow, and it's not likely to be anything that would cause any impact. It's not going to be heavy enough to cause power outages or cause slick spots on the roads, but the farther north and west you are, the better chance Saturday it begins as a little bit of light freezing rain. But we'll be watching that closely, and we're going to walk through the timeline for you coming up in just a little while. Our normal high is 52, 51 tomorrow, 55 Wednesday, 50 on Thursday, but Saturday's our high is 50. So that temperature is going to warm up pretty quickly as soon as that precipitation rolls in, and it is likely to be mainly be rain and a good bit of it, as we talked about at the beginning of the newscast. January at a glance, a little different than a lot of months. We get January as one of the only months, January and July, really, we see very steady normals. So our normal low right now, 31, and at the end of the month, it's 32. Our normal high, 50, at the end of the month, is 52. It's pretty much holding steady. It doesn't mean that our temperatures are steady all month. We still have a lot of ups and downs, but they're pretty equal ups and downs, and it just evens out to be low 50s for highs and right around freezing for lows. A little warmer at 55 Wednesday. There's a small chance of a sprinkle overnight. I'm going to walk you through that and show you how much rain again we could see on Saturday coming up.
All right, thanks, Elizabeth. Your kid's coat could be putting them in danger in the car. Today on your News at 5, 5 on Your Side shows us how to check and how to fix the problem.
Also tonight at 6, we're getting a better picture of the plans and cost for the city of Raleigh to buy the old DMV headquarters property from the state. Matt Tallhelm walks us through what city council plans to do with the $20 million purchase.
Delta plans to hire roughly half as many pilots this year as it did in 2023. It's the latest signal a more than two-year-long hiring spree is starting to slow. Major airlines have been adding pilots at a record pace as they try to catch up with a post-pandemic rebound in travel demand. Delta told its pilots last week that it plans to hire about 1,100 people this year. That's less than half what it added the past 2 years.
DoorDash is plotting expansion beyond its core restaurant delivery business in the U.S. as it looks for ways to invest a growing pile of cash. The company CEO tells the Financial Times they'll keep a high bar for potential acquisitions. DoorDash completed a takeover of Finland's Wolt in 2022, extending its reach to 27 countries. The platform has nearly doubled its market share over the past 5 years and now commands almost 60% of the U.S. market, far ahead of Uber. Elon Musk's social media platform is in a bit of financial trouble. Fidelity reports X, formerly known as Twitter, is now worth 71% less than when Musk bought it in 2022. This is reportedly the second time the investment company has reduced the valuation. Fidelity was part of the investment group that helped Musk finance part of the $44 billion he needed to buy the company.
We are continuing to gather information about that deadly plane crash in Tokyo, how authorities in Japan are dealing with multiple tragedies on the second day of the new year.
Plus, it's time to unplug and recharge. Why one doctor suggests a digital detox for the new year. And here's a look at your winning NC Education Lottery numbers on your screen right now.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
What you're seeing right here is the inferno that was caused by a collision between Japan Airlines Flight 516 and a Coast Guard plane. That's the one on fire there in Tokyo. Five crew members on the Coast Guard plane were killed. The pilot survived with serious injuries. Everyone on the larger jet escaped. Greg Palcott reports the search for the cause will soon begin.
A tragic accident on a Japanese airport runway causing multiple deaths on Tuesday. It happened at Haneda Airport in Tokyo. A packed Airbus plane taxiing on the runway was involved in a collision with a Japanese Coast Guard plane, apparently just landing at the airport. The collision triggering a massive fire. You can see it igniting here. The cabin almost immediately filled with smoke, but amazingly, all passengers and crew appear to have made it out alive.
Japan Airlines informed Japan's Civil Aviation Bureau that 379 people, including 367 passengers and 12 crew members, had been safely evacuated.
But the occupants of the other plane and Japanese service members returning from an aid mission were not as lucky.
Regarding the Coast Guard plane, one captain was evacuated, but five other crew members were confirmed dead.
The accident happened in part because of another major disaster that happened yesterday in Japan. A massive 7.6 magnitude earthquake slammed a western region of the country New Year's Day, causing dozens of deaths and widespread destruction. That Tokyo airport is now closed as crews work to clear the runway. Officials say they'll get it running again as soon as possible to prevent any delays to the rescue and recovery mission.
I was shocked. You never know what will happen. There was an earthquake yesterday, too. Once I got here, there's the fire. You just never know.
Early reports are the Coast Guard plane was landing after giving aid to the earthquake victims. Greg Palcott reporting there, and Japanese officials say they still don't know the cause of the accident. Several agencies are investigating.
Loved ones of an 82nd Airborne pilot badly hurt in a drone strike in Iraq are asking for your prayers. This is Garrett Illebron. He lives in Pinehurst with his wife and son. And the drone attack happened on Christmas Day while Illebron was at Erbil Air Base in northern Iraq. He is now in a hospital in Germany. A close friend told WREL that he has a severe head injury and is still unconscious, but he's making progress. A GoFundMe is raising money to help the family give their son Tucker a treehouse Illebron had arranged and to help outfit their home with the proper supports that he will need when he comes home.
We're basically just going off of prayers and positive energy at this point that he can get reunited with his son, be there to raise him, be there with his wife. They're wonderful people. So if all you can do is pray, we would appreciate that. Anything you can give on the GoFundMe would help them.
The Iran-backed attack that critically injured Illebron and two other servicemen prompted President Joe Biden to order retaliatory strikes targeting affiliated groups. A link to the GoFundMe to help is in this story on WREL.com.
Today, Durham leaders will discuss spending more money to address high lead levels in public parks. Families still can't use portions of the parks because of those issues. These are parks at East End, East Durham, Walltown, Lyon, and Northgate parks. And the city council wants to revise a contract to pay for more environmental testing. They'll discuss the $97,000 price tag during today's meeting, and we'll tell you what they decide. A section of a Raleigh Greenway Trail will close for over 2 weeks starting tomorrow. That closure is along the Neuse River Trail. It's part of the Crabtree Interceptor Project, which will repair a sewer pipe in that area. A section of the trail closes tomorrow through January 19th, and a detour is not available for that closure.
And this just into the WREL Live Center, a deadly shooting in the town of Enfield with the help of Google Maps. It's happening at 308 Carriage House Lane. You see that house right there. But here's what we were told happened. Enfield Police, Halifax County Sheriff's Office, both responding. Investigators say an 81-year-old man, William Neville, was killed by a stray bullet. Another man, Eric Davis, was injured as well. Apparently, investigators found that whole apartment area just riddled with bullets. Mr. Neville had just sat down to eat in the back of that apartment complex. As a result, he did not make it. He was hit by that stray bullet. Davis, who did not know Mr. Neville, was standing in front of that building. He was also shot, but he was treated and released. So far, no arrest in this case. The FBI has been called in to help in this investigation.
As much of the country is settling back in after a busy week of holiday travel, Emily Ikeda has the details on the record high weekend.
This morning, travelers are heading back home and back to work after a massive holiday rush crowded planes, trains, and roadways. TSA screened more than 2.6 million passengers on 7 out of 10 days around Christmas. Lines weaving through airports over the long weekend in places like Orlando, Chicago, and Atlanta. Still, 2023 marked the lowest flight cancellation rate in 5 years, according to the FAA. Welcomed improvement from last Christmas when winter storms set off a cascade of problems that stranded travelers.
Are you relieved you haven't been delayed?
I'm relieved, believe me, especially with the kids.
And while for many flying has been smooth sailing, there have been heightened security concerns over the holiday from the war in the Middle East. And early on New Year's Day, a scary scene in Rochester, New York. A fiery crash killing two and injuring others after two SUVs collided and hit a group of pedestrians near a concert venue. Authorities finding gas canisters in one of the cars. The FBI now part of the investigation. Elsewhere in New York, traffic backed up yesterday around JFK and LaGuardia airports by pro-Palestinian protests on one of the busiest air travel days of the year. And major server issues caused Amtrak disruptions in the Northeast over the weekend.
My train has been delayed, and I don't know how I'm going to get there.
In Florida, Ryan Lewis's family is relieved their travel nightmare is over after his 16-year-old son, flying alone for the first time, accidentally boarded the wrong flight. He says Frontier Airlines never scanned Logan's ticket, and he landed in Puerto Rico instead of Cleveland as a result.
I could feel the fear in the text message. Like, I could feel how scared he was. My heart pretty much sank at that point.
Frontier apologized to the family and got Logan to Cleveland the next day. While New Year's capped off a record stretch of air travel, analysts say 2024 will be even busier.
Wow, that was Emily Ikeda reporting. Just ahead for us, changing the rules when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, what some companies could be forced to do in the future.
And if you're still looking to make a New Year's resolution, doctors have some recommendations, what they are suggesting to help you with your mental health. And you can watch WRL News live anytime on WRL.com or the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. Some big tech companies could be facing major case decisions this year. Antitrust cases are reportedly expected to be finalized this year against some businesses like Google and Meta Platforms. The Justice Department claims Google's search engine and ad brokering created monopolies. Closing arguments could begin in May. The Federal Trade Commission's suit against Meta claims the company weakened competition by acquiring potential rivals like WhatsApp and Instagram. Meta argues its acquisitions benefited consumers. A new rule could force companies to release the amount of greenhouse gas they generate. The Securities and Exchange Commission says companies need to disclose any climate change risks as a result of their produced emissions. Business leaders and those against the rule say it goes beyond the SEC's goal of regulating fair markets. Supporters say investors have the right to know the financial risk businesses may have because of climate change. The SEC is expected to finalize that ruling this spring.
If you're still looking for a New Year's resolution, doctors are recommending a social media detox. Research from psychologists with the Cleveland Clinic shows scrolling through social media for more than 30 minutes a day could increase anxiety, loneliness, and depression. Doctors say taking a break might encourage people to be more present in life and improve relationships. They recommend turning off notifications, deleting apps, and making the whole family take part in the detox in order to stick with the resolution.
A local HBCU makes its debut on the national stage. How the high-stepping Aggies rocked out at the Tournament of Roses parade.
Also, a local award-winning composer and author are making beautiful harmony where you can enjoy a unique performance this week. Get ready for an unforgettable evening of jazz and literature. Composer Greg Gelb and author Trinity Bursey collaborate for a special show at the Temple Theater in Sanford. And this afternoon, we are joined by Greg and Trinity to talk about Jazz Tales. Guys, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Glad to be here.
Okay, Greg, let's start with you. So your extensive biography, very impressive, composer, musician, educator, and the founder and director of the Heart of Carolina Jazz Orchestra, among other things. Tell us what drew you to this specific project.
I got an email from Trinity, and I didn't know who it was. And she said she's written a book that she thinks would go well with music. And I was like, okay, well, let me see the book. And as soon as I saw it, she sent it to me. It was like, oh, wow, I can see how this can fit.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Okay, Trinity, let's talk about that book. Your book shows and helps readers and listeners learn that there is beauty in diversity. So tell us about the day that instruments split.
Yes. So the day the instruments split starts out with live instruments who are playing beautifully together. They're all getting along. When one day they figure because they're different, they shouldn't play together. And because of that, chaos just erupts over the whole town. And it's up to Lyric, the star of the book, and her friends to help them realize that they really are better together. And it helps us as readers realize that we're better just as people together.
I love that so much. I love that message. And we understand that you'll be reading this book during the performance on Friday. Greg, you've written new music for the Heart of Carolina Jazz Orchestra, specifically for Jazz Tales. How will the themes of the book and performance really come together?
Well, we were talking the other day, Trinity, and she said, you know, sometimes it helps when you're writing music if you have a story. And because, you know, this music just came to me so quick. It's the quickest I've ever written new music. And it's just because I had a story, you know. I mean, the instruments, when they're playing together, you can think of beauty and happiness. And when they're not playing together, you can think of all the dissonance. And so I just had so much fun being able to write music for this.
What has been your favorite part of working together on this?
I would say it's just seeing different ways that a story can come to life. We have an animation team that's animating the book for us. We have the music by Greg and the orchestra. I just feel like it's beautiful how everyone's talents have come together to make this amazing concert.
Oh my goodness. And Greg, what about you? What's been your favorite part?
Well, my favorite part is the fact that we need a story like this nowadays. Because people, if they're different, they don't seem like they want to get along. And that's just crazy. You know, we should be all getting along and appreciating our differences and accepting diversity. It just makes our whole culture, I think, so much richer. So her story, I think, is so appropriate.
Absolutely. A beautiful collaboration. Do not miss your chance to catch Jazz Tales, Literature and Music Unite in Harmony this Friday at the Temple Theater located at 120 Carthage Street in Sanford. Tickets are $20 for ages 17 and older. 16 and under are $10. Greg Gelb and Trinity Bursey, thank you so much for joining us and have fun with this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
It's natural for an audiobook, right? I mean, that's so great. And we're going to sing the tune of Sunshine Outside right now. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRO Severe Weather Center, and the temperatures have come up a little bit.
Yeah, starting to warm up. That sunshine feels good. It's not as windy as it was yesterday and the day before. So it's, you know, not too bad out there. A high temperature is going to be near normal for this time of year. It is January. Of course, Goldsboro, Fayetteville, Chapel Hill, and Apex all looking good. Chapel's courtesy of Top of the Hill Restaurant in Fayetteville right there on Hay Street where our newsroom is. We'll take another look at the temperatures and the wind chill. It does feel chilly out there. It feels like 42 in Southern Pines. The wind chill is in the white box on the right, the temperature on the left. So it's 43 in Roxborough, but it feels like 38. It's 47 in Rocky Mount, but feels like 41. So a little bit of a breeze out there, making it feel a little cooler than it actually is. A significant system is coming for us over the weekend. We're looking at wintry weather with this, especially in the mountains, up into Virginia, all the way up through the Northeast and into New England. We're looking at rain here. There's a small chance that if the rain starts early enough, it would start as a little bit of light freezing rain. But we're not expecting any impacts here. However, there could be some travel impacts with this, especially as it moves north and east, dumping a lot of snow as a nor'easter over the weekend. You take a look at what's happening across the country right now. It's nice and quiet, but we are going to see a little coastal low that develops for Wednesday night and Thursday. Different system than the one that's going to affect us on Saturday. This one's just going to kind of clip us. First thing on Thursday morning, just to the south and east of Raleigh, there could be a little bit of light rain. It's not going to really hardly be enough to measure in the rain gauges. This will be a very light event. Most of us will sleep through it, but if you're early risers like some of us in the morning, and you're south and east of Raleigh, you could see a little bit of that late Wednesday, early Thursday. But this one is going to be the big deal for us on Saturday. We'll likely have a lot of heavy rain with this. On the backside of it, it may change over to snow in the mountains. It may start as snow in the mountains, but the mountains are probably going to get some rain out of this too. Let's take a look at the timeline. We'll pause it right here at 6 a.m., and you can see the western part of the state showing up as pink. That's going to be a wintry mix, some sleet, some freezing rain, maybe a little snow mixed in. You can see the blue, some of the higher elevations in the mountains seeing some snow. But right now, we're looking at green over our viewing area, changing to yellow, which just means the rain becomes heavier. So again, if we saw any in our viewing area, it would be very quick. It would be freezing rain, maybe a little bit of sleet, no accumulation, no power outages, nothing that's going to have any impact. But we do continue to see that band of snow moving up into Virginia and then across parts of Pennsylvania, New York, and into the Northeast. So that could cause some travel problems. We are looking at some dry conditions for us on Sunday, but a significant amount of rain with this. Again, this is, you know, one in a line of systems that is very much like that, coming up the coast, bringing in a lot of precipitation. So an inch and a half to 2 inches. We'll continue to watch this. A couple things that we'll watch here. We'll watch to see if this number actually climbs. This looks like a really potent system with a good tap of moisture coming off of the Atlantic. And of course, we'll also watch to see the timeline, because if it comes in a little bit earlier, we'd have a better chance of seeing a little bit of light freezing rain. Still don't think any of this is going to be snow for us. Look at that. We're at a 0% chance of an inch of snow. But Boone has a 94% chance, and you can see that we have a 60 to 80% chance as that moves up into the Northeast. Our high this afternoon, 51, 55 Wednesday. We are looking at a high of 50 on Saturday. So again, any freezing temperatures would be short-lived for us on Saturday.
UNC Children's Hospital doctors are at it again, spreading some cheer with a new music video. See how they're using some classic dance moves to welcome in the new year.
As we wrap things up, here's a look at a few of the headlines we're following today. A passenger plane burst into flames as it landed at Tokyo Airport after a collision with a Coast Guard aircraft. 5 people on the Coast Guard plane were killed. The pilot was able to make it out. All 379 passengers and crew were able to make it off of the passenger plane. That Coast Guard plane was supposed to deliver humanitarian aid to the earthquake-hit region of Japan.
Happening today, a Cary man will face a judge after being charged with hitting and killing a 6-year-old girl Friday morning. Jocelyn Perez Hernandez was killed last week near Walnut Street in Cary. Police say 50-year-old Andrew Everett hit her with his car. Everett faces 5 charges, including involuntary manslaughter and misdemeanor death by motor vehicle.
New restrictions start today for visitors to hospitals in the Triangle area. It's all in an effort to help slow the spread of the flu, RSV, and COVID. Beginning today, visitors in all WakeMed Hospital patient care areas, including waiting rooms, must be at least 12 years old. Similar restrictions go into place for UNC Hospitals Chapel Hill, Hillsborough, and Youth Behavioral Health campuses.
A university from our state was on the national stage during the Rose Bowl parade in Pasadena, California.
Here they come, the blue and gold marching machine. They're high-stepping, high-energy band. They're from North Carolina Agriculture and Technical State University. This is their first time, by the way, in the Rose Parade. We'd like to welcome the Aggies.
Yeah, the North Carolina A&T Marching Machine, one of 20 marching bands selected to participate in the annual event. And you heard Hoda Kotb there mention it. It was the Aggies' first appearance in the event. They rocked it. Michigan, meantime, topped Alabama in overtime when the Rose Bowl played. It was 27-20 Wolverines.
Oh, this will make you smile. The doctors at UNC Children's dancing their way into the new year with a music video. The team at the Chapel Hill Hospital hoping to spread a little cheer while thanking doctors and staff who worked tirelessly for patients and their families. The video was also a farewell for Dr. Gold, who you saw there doing the dirty dancing lift.
Pet of the day is the ultimate survivor, Walter. He was abandoned and left to fend for himself, but he made friends in the neighborhood, dug a hole for he and a buddy to sleep in during the cold weather. He's a heartworm positive pup, but he's finished his pre-medication. If you're looking for a loyal friend, Walter's your guy.
All right. NBC News Daily is next on WREL, your next local news update in 30 minutes.
You can get breaking news updates anytime with our WREL News app. Happy New Year to you. I hope you have a great day.
Happy New Year.
Keep watching WREL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.